Good morning from Redmond. Today we're at the MVA. You've got Documents, MongoDB Jumpstart. With me today is Stephen Edouard, and I'm Rami. And today what we're gonna do is we're gonna cover MongoDB from beginning to roughly the end. But before we get to that, let's sort of set the stage a bit. Now, MongoDB falls as part of this NoSQL ecosystem. Now, before we even dive into what is NoSQL, what were some of the problems that developers were experiencing that sort of led to these solutions coming up?
Sure. So when NoSQL came about, the whole movement, I believe like 2008, 2009, the biggest issue, it was two big issues. One was scalability. So SQL databases just didn't really scale to millions and millions of entities. And then we also had the problem with flexibility. So SQL databases will do things like force you to have a certain structure and say that a year later, your business or application logic requires a different data structure or data organization. It doesn't really make it as easy to change. It's not very flexible. So those are two biggest issues, Rami, that we were facing with NoSQL or with SQL databases. And that's why NoSQL kind of came about.
So startups in the Valley, for example, they might not know, or new companies, they might not know what all of the data that they're going to store for a specific entity, some type of data model. Yep. So they needed to be very flexible in the way that they would store this stuff. And SQL wasn't quite, some of the tools for SQL weren't quite the best to handle that. And
oh, yeah, totally.
That's
like one of the biggest things, right? So
right.
With startups, you have, the biggest thing about startups is that they start their business, they have no, like the definition of a startup is you really don't have a certainty of where you're going to be or what you're going to be doing, maybe even 3 months from the moment that they start. And to say that you need to create a data structure which accurately describes your problem scenario that you're trying to solve before you've even gotten to a mature stage in your business is not really possible. So that's why actually startups, you'll see a lot of startups actually adopt these NoSQL databases because it gives them the flexibility in the future to change those things.
All right, well, that was Stephen. My name is Rami. I'm a technical evangelist based out of Montreal, so that's on the East Coast. And what I like to focus on in my work is the web, HTML5, JavaScript, Node, IE11, and Azure. And really what I enjoy the most doing about my job is helping startups and developers in Montreal build really awesome technologies. I'm super active on Twitter. If you want to follow me, that's my handle right there. And I blog fairly frequently on Canadian Devs and RamiSar.com. I'm here with Stephen Edouard, and Stephen is a former software test engineer.
I am.
But I'll let you say a few words about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Stephen. I was a software development engineer and test on the .NET runtime. So I worked on a couple of cool projects. If you heard of Project N, like the new native compilation change, plus a couple of the modern versions of .NET. And now, so I'm a startup developer evangelist down in Silicon Valley. So I work with startups to enable them to use our technologies, partner with us with maybe different customers that we have that where we can align our interests and focuses. And I focus on Azure with open source technologies in particular. Mm-hmm. Startups love open source technologies. It helps out with, helps in cost, but not only in cost, but as well as being able to contribute back to the source. And obviously, the site has my blog and my Twitter handle. So if you're interested in any of the other things I like to hack on or create, I like to make a lot of cool stuff. Feel free to hit that website up. And I have a lot of cool, cool things you could take a look at.
Awesome. So today, the course topics, and they're sort of structured into six topics. The first module, this one, we're going to introduce what NoSQL document-oriented databases are all about and how they are different in relation to things like tabular data sources. Module two, we're going to work on getting started with MongoDB specifically. And we're going to look at the queries that we've got. We're going to continue working with some of the advanced queries in module three. And then in module four, we're going to work and figure out how to actually connect to MongoDB from two very popular programming languages, C# and Node.js. So if you're familiar with C# or familiar with JavaScript, then stay tuned at least for until module 4, and we'll show you how to connect to MongoDB using those languages. Module 5 is extremely exciting, to be honest, because we're going to be doing some fairly cool advanced data processing with Mongo. We're going to explore how to use MapReduce and how to use data aggregation to actually get some incredible insight from big data that we might have. Finally, Module 6, we're going to show you how to run MongoDB on a cloud Ubuntu virtual machine. We're going to host that up on Azure. So if you're interested in deploying MongoDB at the end of this module and you've been following through the whole day, well, we'll got you set up. We'll show you how to get it up right away. And you'll be able to connect from different web apps to that same document storage.
Is it Ubuntu or Ubuntu?
I mean, I say Ubuntu. I don't know exactly what it is.
It's probably accent change, depending on.
Yeah. It's at least the way I say it is something, I guess, that's how I heard people on the East Coast say it, but it could be very different from folks elsewhere. Yeah. And it could be that I'm from Montreal, so we tend to read words differently because we've got a little bit of that French background, so it's a little bit different.
Could be a little bit.
A little bit of that. So just to set some expectations, hopefully you will fall into one of these categories. We're trying to target the content in this MVA to startup developers, open source developers, and enterprise developers who are interested in things that aren't just SQL Server. So basically, if you're a startup and you've been working, you're trying to figure out, okay, well, how do I store my data in a way that's flexible if I need to pivot in the future? Yeah. Well, then with MongoDB, we'll show you how that's done. Yeah. If you're an open source developer, you're basically building your entire stack on you're building a LAMP stack, for example, you might want to use Mongo as your data store as well. Now, if you haven't at least had some experience with JavaScript, it's really recommended that you take a few moments to just take a look at some of the differences between JavaScript and the languages that you do know, because working with MongoDB actually has us using JavaScript in the command line tool. So it's a little bit interesting in that they took a really, really popular language that is mostly predominantly on the web, but it's now in your database. It seems like JavaScript is just everywhere.
It's taking over. I really think it is. It's awesome, though. So we'll definitely see in module 2 where essentially just straight up in the command line, we're just straight JavaScript just to manage the database administration, things like that that you would expect to not use JavaScript for. We're using it for database management.
All right. So if you haven't joined the MVA community, MVA stands for Microsoft Virtual Academy. This is the site that you're on right now. And essentially, it's a free online learning tool tailored for IT professionals and developers. There's over a million people registered on MVA, so you're definitely in a large community working all learning together. And you can definitely ask each other questions. We have a chat room that's going on for this MVA today. So if you have any questions, please feel free to post them in the chat room, and we'll address them live on camera right here. We won't even wait till it's over. We'll answer your questions right now. Now, the other thing that you got to keep in mind is that MVA, you can get points for different stuff, and you can redeem these points for other things. So if you're interested in getting 50 MVA points for listening live, it's quite easy how you get those points. You got to visit aka.ms/MVA-voucher. It's on the slide, if you can see it right now, and you basically enter this code, MongoDB. Now, you got to do this as soon as possible because this code actually expires on this date in 2015, the 20th of January 2015. So, without further ado, I think it's time to actually get into the meat of this module. Yep. Let's talk about NoSQL documents. Now, this module is sort of structured in two sort of parts. A discussion of what tabular data sources are, things that you might be familiar with if you've ever used SQL and any of those other databases, and how that's different with to document-oriented data stores.
Yep.
So tell me, Stephen, what are tabular data sources?
Okay. So tabular data sources are, and we can call them column-oriented or tabular. I like to call them tabular, but really it's any data store where you organize your data into a table. And it could be a SQL database, but like we mentioned earlier, it could also be a NoSQL database. So in the case of SQL databases, tabular data stores have things called foreign keys, where an entity in a row, so a row or an entity, would point to another entity on another table. So essentially, your data for a thing or a related set of things is spread across multiple tables. And so that's what we call tabular, where the organization is for that that data is actually spread between multiple tables. You have NoSQL table stores, too, which don't really do that, meaning that either there's no strict enforcement between a foreign key, meaning, and we'll talk about that in a second, Rami, but a foreign key between one entity pointing to another, that entity could not exist or something, and that would be okay. Whereas in a lot of SQL databases, that's not okay, and it'll actually throw an error if you try to do that.
So if you have a tabular database of some kind, and you've got all of these columns. Now, typically, from my understanding, you can't change these columns as frequently as you'd like. You can't completely scrap the data, split things up. It's a little bit harder when you're in a SQL type data store.
Yeah, so definitely in a SQL type data store, that becomes a little difficult. We'll say that you have a column which has a foreign key. Yeah. If you drop it, you know that might break the relationship. Or if you have a foreign key that points to another row on another table, if you try to delete that row, you might get an error there. Now, with NoSQL data stores that are tabular, column-oriented, it's actually a little bit more flexible because you can drop some columns, and it could be okay. I know, for example, Azure tables. I'm not too sure about Amazon's Denmo tables, but if you drop a column, it's fine. You just lose the data. If you want to add another column, it's fine. You just won't have any data for the new for the existing rows with that added new column, if that kind of makes sense. So you still get a little bit of flexibility there. But SQL generally doesn't give you that flexibility.
And I understand that a lot of folks are building apps that might have binary type data. Let's say pictures, if you're building a photo sharing app. Let's say you're building a music sharing app. Let's say you're building a clone of some of the popular music streaming sites out there. And you want to store this data in your database, in something that's scalable. Does NoSQL let you do stuff like that?
Well, I mean, I think in my opinion, I don't think you should put binary data like that into a database because databases are really for structured data or data that you can go through and query against. You can't query against a song exactly, right? So when you're talking about binary files like that, regardless of the data store you're using, you probably want to put that into something like Azure Blob Storage or maybe Amazon S3 Storage and just keep it in there and just store the pointer to that data so that you don't actually blow up your database size. Because I don't think people understand that there's actually overhead. When you add stuff to your database, there's an overhead to that data that the database causes. So you're actually just kind of hurting yourself more. And there's better networks like content distributed networks that actually take care of that for you. And it's a lot better and more efficient. Gets the content to your users a lot quicker.
So although NoSQL and big data tend to be lumped into the same conversation, fundamentally, they're not exactly the same, right?
No, absolutely not. Okay. Yeah, so big data, you're talking about getting insights on large amounts of data. And large data, we're talking like maybe terabytes, mm-hmm. Just you know, grossly large. Now, NoSQL is just a flexibility. It can be scalable, and generally NoSQL databases do some trade-offs to get that scalability. Mm-hmm. But NoSQL is really talking more about data, things that we can query against, things that we can get, that we can do with databases. And things like Hadoop, where you can do huge MapReduce tasks, those are a little different. Now, we will talk about today using MapReduce on MongoDB. It actually offers it out of the box, which is pretty neat. But it's we really shouldn't muddle the two because we would be here all day.
Right. So the ecosystem is fairly big now. You've got different types of NoSQL databases. And the one that we're going to talk about today is actually MongoDB. Mm-hmm. So what is MongoDB?
So MongoDB is a NoSQL database. It's a tabular. It's no tabular data. So it's all document orientated. Mm-hmm. So people, you know, I think the first time I looked at MongoDB, I was like, wow, what is this? It's quite different than what you're used to. And when you come from tabular data sources, I remember in college, all we learned was SQL. And even after SQL, I've learned like Azure tables and, you know, was still used to tabular data. And this kind of MongoDB kind of came around and kind of blew my mind a little bit as far as how you can organize your data. And so really what it does, it organizes everything to collections, documents, but no tables. A collection is just a collection of these things called documents. And a document is really just a organization of just self-enclosing organization of things that are all related to each other. Because of this, the way it's structured, there aren't any joins. You don't need to join things between these entities because ideally all that data should just be in one. And that's kind of the philosophy that MongoDB follows. And it's not good for everything, but it's definitely good for a lot of things.
So if I had, a document describing some of my bank data, that would include all the accounts that I have, all of my profile information in the same document?
Yes. So all that data would actually just be self-enclosed into one document. And that document, you might ask, well, what does that look like? It looks a lot like JSON. That's the most popular way or format of using it. It doesn't have to be, but that's the most popular way. So in a scenario like a bank, you would have that user and all their accounts kind of just in this self-enclosing thing, rather than having this data spread out between two. I believe we're going to go to an example that kind of really hits on this a little bit more.
So if you have all of these collections and then you don't need to do joins to just get data from different parts of the database, and when you have this one document that contains everything, what does that do for scalability? Does it improve things? Does it make it faster? Can you scale horizontally a lot more?
Yeah, so I mean, if you think about it, right? So say that you have a couple of tables and you might have it sharded, that data sharded between a lot of different servers. When you do things in MongoDB, you're doing it on a per document basis. So if you're looking, if you're trying to do a join, which doesn't exist in MongoDB, on a SQL table, it could be quite large depending on what you're joining on. Expensive. Whereas in MongoDB, because everything's kind of in a self-enclosing document, MongoDB really optimizes for horizontal scalability. Now, what are we talking about when we mean horizontal, right? Vertical scalability is, hey, maybe your program's running quite slow. You're going to get a faster computer, and you might get some more memory to support that program. Horizontal scalability is, instead of getting a faster computer and more memory for that one box, you'll get five more boxes with the same amount of memory and CPU power and kind of spread that workload across different machines rather than having one machine do more work. And so that's what this concept of horizontal scalability is. And actually it works out pretty well because it's less expensive, as well as, especially with the cloud, you can use some flexibility as far as how many resources you want to pay for and use, depending on the load and demand that you have on your service.
So I don't need to get all of these really large size VMs if I want to run MongoDB across different, if I want to run MongoDB in such a way that it scales to the demand that I have. I don't need to just get this very large VM anymore, I can actually get a lot of small ones.
Yeah, MongoDB offers sharding where we can take different MongoDB instances. The same database can be spread across these different servers. And that allows for scalability as far as the number of users that you can take, number of transactions you can do to serve your clients. And the clients can be a website, it could be an app, whatever.
And if one of these machines went down, I don't lose that data, correct?
Yeah, so MongoDB has replication sets.
Right.
And so if a machine goes down, there's a replication set mechanism in MongoDB that prevents data loss, mm-hmm. As long as the things were committed to the journal. And if it's committed to journal, then it's committed to disk and it's persistent.
That's fantastic. So it seems like it's extremely flexible, very scalable, and it lets me change how I store my data on the fly.
Yeah, that's why it's gotten pretty popular with startups, just because of the flexibility here. You know, the same reason why we're talking about why NoSQL just gotten popular, MongoDB has just been one of the more popular ones just because of its ability to scale and its ability to be flexible for future scenarios and situations. So like I mentioned, though, it's not particularly, it doesn't fit everything, just depending on what your data schema is that you need to support, but it is good for a lot of things.
So let's say that I'm building a new bank. I like that example a lot. And as a new bank, I don't necessarily have all of this legacy software that I need to support. I'm building everything from scratch. Now, as a bank, obviously we'll have customers, and they will have accounts. So how do we keep track of persons and accounts?
Okay, so well, we can first talk about it in the tabular way that you would normally do it, and then we'll also talk. We can talk about it in the way that you would do it in a document-oriented database, like MongoDB. So the first time around, so say that you have this bank and they have a traditional SQL database, right? So they have persons or account holders, and they have accounts for those people. So say that we have two people, Stephen, Edward, myself, actually, and Sam Brightwood.
Who's Sam?
I literally invented that name. So Brightwood sounds pretty cool, though. It sounds pretty convincing.
Yeah.
So and then say that we have accounts, and accounts can have a few fields like the account type or the balance of the account, as well as the currency. And the if you notice at the end of the accounts table, there's a foreign key persons for the holder. And that's a pointer, like I mentioned before, like SQL would have to the person that's in the account holders. Now, in this scenario, say that I wanted to delete Stephen Edward, well, there would be a problem because account 0, 1, and 2 would still point to nothing. They would point to still Stephen. Mm-hmm. So actually, you'd want to delete account 0, 1, and 2, and then delete Stephen, so that your database maintains consistency. Otherwise, you would it would be pointing off to nothing, and that's why SQL kind of gives this non-flexibility here. So now, if I wanted to, so this is how it would be organized in a SQL database. Every like type of entity really has its own table, which is it's quite different than what we'll see in Mongo. So now, say that we wanted to be able to get some data about this table or about the data in this table. So I think if we flip, so what if we have the account holder with ID 1? What would be the name for that account holder? So it's pretty simple. It's really straightforward. You look up account ID 1, and then attached to that data is Sam Brightwood. Mm-hmm. First name Sam, last name Brightwood. We didn't really need to touch any other tables. We didn't need to touch anything else. We had it all in one shot, which is pretty inexpensive. That works pretty well. Unfortunately, though, this is not the this is probably one of the simplest things, and it doesn't really apply to a lot of the different scenarios that we'll see.
So if I was building the website portal for my bank and I was I wanted to log in, then I guess having this first table is enough.
Yep.
But the minute that I log in, I do want to show the customer his accounts, right?
Yep.
So if I have to do, I would have to do another query with this account holder's ID to get his accounts.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
Now, that sounds to me like it's two different queries. It could get really expensive if your database is huge, it's filled with a lot of data. I guess in theory, so if we had all this stuff in one document, it might be a little bit more performant, and I could change things a little bit differently.
It would help, and we'll see that in a second. So let's look and see how we would do this with a tabular data store, specifically a SQL data store. So we'll answer the question: who's the account holder for account ID 3? So again, I think this is a scenario where you just mentioned where say that I have account holder, and I want to know, or say I have an account and I want to know who the account holder is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so now we have an issue, right? Because that data is not stored on the accounts table. It's not physically there. So because it's not, we have to actually go off and find it in another table.
Right.
So actually, one of the things that SQL databases do quite frequently, it's a very common scenario, is that you need to join information. Mm-hmm. And joining is literally taking two tables and kind of smashing them together. into one larger table, really is what you can kind of think of it as. Mm-hmm. So what we'll do is we'll say, okay, well, give me the account ID 3, so where the count's ID 3, and we'll say, okay, can we match the ID to the count holder's table's ID? And we know because it's a foreign key, we're gonna match just one. And so we'll see that you can actually see in the animation here, in the diagram, we join on the account holder ID, and then we'll see that we have Sam Brightwood attached to the account holder 3. So we know that the answer is the holder for account 3 is Sam Brightwood because of that join. But that didn't come together, like that data wasn't together, right?
Yeah.
So we have to do that on the server, and it has to bring that data together. Now, the problem is that we'll see that in SQL databases, as things get bigger and bigger and bigger.
More complex, more
tables.
Yeah,
more complex, more tables, especially if you're not joining on a key. Then you start having some issues because it can become quite expensive, and those queries can be quite slow. And so that was the issue that we're seeing with that type of data. And NoSQL databases kind of do a trade-off between what the complex relationships that you can store in SQL for performance and scalability, as well as flexibility. So that's what we kind of see the issue there. So let's go to one more example that we would see in a SQL database. So say that I want to see which accounts
are held by Stephen and Warren.
Yeah. Yep. So what if I want to see where my accounts are? So like you mentioned, like the first question you ask, like, well, you know, you sign in, you have the user, let's get their accounts, right? So we kind of have to do something similar, except we'll start, instead of starting from the accounts table, we'll start from the account holders table. Mm-hmm. So we'll say, okay, well, I know that I'm looking for Stephen Edward. So I'll look for Stephen, I'll look for Edward, and then say, okay, well, give me all the account holders with the first name, last name, Stephen Edward. It's just one. We have the ID now, and we'll say, okay, now let's do a join between that ID for Stephen Edward and the accounts table, and let's see where those IDs match. And so again, this is another join on the account holder's ID to get that same the associated accounts for Stephen Edward. So we'll see that in this case we have three, but you know it could be a wide variety of however many that match, and then that's what will come back as the result for your query. But again, like I said, it's like this data is not together, and it can cause problems as you kind of scale out.
So you can imagine as a bank, you've got quite a lot of different data that you have to store, things that are regulatory perhaps, and things that are more preferences for the account holder. So all that stuff in a SQL database or a tabular database will go in separate tables. And if I was just trying to get all that information for my one big dashboard, well, then I'd have to do a join with that will impact several different tables.
Yep, exactly.
Right? Okay, well, that's... And let's say that some of this information I didn't have the foreign key for, or the ID key,
yep.
Then I would have to also include that in my query as well.
Yep, you might have to join on something that wasn't a key. And that can be potentially more expensive than what you would have expected with just the keys.
All right, so document-oriented databases do away with these joins, these very complicated joins, by having all of the data in sort of one place. There's no tables, there's no rows, it's just collections of documents.
Yep, exactly.
So tell me a little bit more about these document-oriented data stores.
So what you'll see is that rather than having this separation of entities across different tables, we'll literally it's kind of like your data is natively joined. And I think that's basically the biggest concept of Mongo, is that it's actually just all that data is just natively joined to where joins aren't necessary, to where everything is just one ball of like information. It's not really separated or anything like that. So it becomes quite handy, because we can grab one piece of information and we'll automatically have another piece. We don't necessarily have to go off and find another query or find another collection or find something else to do an operation again.
But if I just wanted some of the elements in that table, can I still just get those specific properties or information or attributes from that one document, or do I have to get the whole thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we talk about queries, especially more advanced queries that we'll talk about in modules 2 and 3, we'll talk about how we can do projections against that, so we can filter out what we don't want, so that you kind of reduce the chattiness over the line and have not have to get all the data when you actually don't need everything. You only need a subset of what that document has. And so it kind of reduces the amount of noise and amount of traffic that we have to actually get from the MongoDB connection.
All right, so you mentioned earlier something about JSON. I know it's like every time I hear something related to JavaScript, I'm just always shocked because it's just everywhere.
Yep.
Everywhere. And so you mentioned something about JSON. Is that how these document-oriented stores mostly show their data?
Yeah, so what's interesting is that, and we'll talk about a couple others lightly, but the really popular ways to do it in a JavaScript object notation, JSON format. Now, what's interesting is that MongoDB isn't actually storing the data in JSON. It's actually supporting it in something called BSON, which is binary. Serial. I actually forgot what the acronym
something
is.
Binary something object notation of some kind.
Yes, exactly. It is basically the binary version of JSON.
Okay.
The reason why they do this is because it's a little more performant. Mm-hmm. But from a visualization standpoint, from the external user standpoint, it's about the same as JSON. So you could just think of it like that, and that's how it's kind of organized. So you don't really have to worry too much about those details. But we'll talk about in a sec. We'll see like how MongoDB is actually not really storing it as JSON internally, which kind of helps out with the query performance. Mm-hmm. So,
but if I wanted to see what it looks like, so this is something that's interesting. So I have on the screen an example of what looks like a collection. We've got two elements right here, ID 0, ID 1, and we've got an accounts key that also holds another array that has inside it a bunch of other sort of objects. And this clearly is something that I could copy-paste into my JavaScript file and it will compile.
Yeah,
run.
It'll run.
Yeah,
definitely.
So compiling, wrong terminology, wrong language. My bad.
Compiling. Silver.
Yeah, I just wanted to. I really meant to say validate. It will be valid.
Yeah.
Yes. So here we've got these two documents. So if I wanted to store something like this in a document-oriented database, this is sort of the native representation that I would use. Something like this JSON.
Yeah,
what's
interesting is that that's literally how it's stored.
Okay.
So it's not even a representation. That's how it looks like in the database. So what we saw earlier, the two tables that we saw, accounts and persons, this is actually the same exact data that we saw earlier, just in document form. Mm-hmm. Now, what you notice is that in the collection, at the root level is the person.
Yeah.
That's where it all starts. And that person has things like accounts and a first name and a last name.
Maybe profile settings.
Joined
accounts, stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. How long they've been a customer.
Yeah.
A lot of metadata about what you would think that person would have. And then associated with that is the actual can be embedded documents is what we call. So this rabbit hole can keep going and going and going where we have documents within documents within documents. And we'll talk about it as in the case that we'll be talking about is the accounts will actually just be an embedded collection within the MongoDB document, which allows us to avoid having to do these joins because, well, it's already embedded in there. And so you don't really have to do that.
So MongoDB will let me query anything that's in a document, including the accounts that are inside the sort of from the hierarchical point of view, the account, the bigger account that contains the person's name and metadata.
Yep.
I can still query some of the accounts that he might have for this person.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay, so literally anything that's in the document, I can reach it.
Exactly. It's really anything that's inside there is fair game for a query, which makes it really powerful because you don't really have to look at, say, okay, well, I got the accounts, now let me find that account holder, or I have the account holder, and now let me find the accounts for that person.
So if I had the question, who is the account holder for account ID 3?
Mm-hmm.
What do I have to do?
So the account holder for account ID 3, you would look up account ID 3, and you could do that directly in MongoDB. Mm-hmm. And then once you find account ID 3, remember, we can query and embed it
inside the documents.
Yeah, so we can go through the whole collection, look at inside the documents, and say, okay, well, I found the account with account ID 3. That gave me a document.
And it'll give you the whole document.
It can give me the whole document.
Or you could choose to just take the specific account that's in this document.
Yes, I could choose just to take the account as well. I could say, well, I found a matching document, and that's what it is.
So let's say I wanted to query for the accounts that you hold, that Stephen Edward holds. What do I have to do?
So in this case, we kind of do something similar to what we had before. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is we'll query for the first name, Stephen, and the last name, Edward. Now, the cool thing is, Rami, is that you would think, okay, well, you know, you're querying for first name Steven, last name Edward, and we expect that there's one, right? Or we can query by the, when we query by the count ID, we expect that there's one.
Mm-hmm.
You can query, the way that MongoDB works is that there's a couple of ID attributes, but past that, a lot of it's up to you. So we can say that we have the expectation for this table that first name Steven, last name Edward, or first name, last name results in a unique document. And that's really just enforced by you. Doesn't necessarily have to be that way, but
so it's not enforced by MongoDB. It's enforced by my code.
Yep, exactly.
That queries this database, interesting, and that inserts documents into this database.
Yep, exactly. So now what we'll see is that because we query by first name Steven, last name Edward, we'll get one document, right? And then that document literally gives us all the accounts that's attached to it. So now we can say instead of hey, who is the account holder for account ID or for Steven Edward, we'll just say, give me Steven Edward, and well, I can get everything, all the information about this one person in really one shot, rather than having to sift through a lot of different tables and then wait for that query to come back and spend that extra time doing those things.
Now, I know that there are other document-oriented data stores, and do they all sort of function similar to MongoDB, or is it different?
Similar. So there's some nuance changes or nuance differences. So a couple that I could think of off the top of my head are CouchDB and as well as Microsoft's own DocumentDB.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually in preview.
That's a new this new service that's up on Azure right now, right?
Yeah, it's a new service actually. So it's actually preview.
Preview mode.
But for example, Office 365 uses it. I believe a couple other services internally use it. But the cool part about it, and I think we have a slide at the end, but I'll just chat about it now. It has SQL-like data. So or SQL-like query language. Mm-hmm. So we'll notice that with MongoDB queries, we'll see in the next module that it's quite different than SQL. It's actually very different. As opposed to DocDB actually has a SQL-like
interface,
yeah,
a way
interface.
To query
documents
with SQL. So if you're familiar with SQL already,
yeah,
and you don't have to learn how to query this database using their specific method, right?
Yeah,
I can stick with my SQL.
Yeah, it's not strict. It's not strictly SQL, but SQL-like, you know,
similar.
Yeah, so you don't feel too
a lot more familiar.
Exactly. So I would say that's, you know, that's actually pretty good for someone who's pretty used to SQL.
Mm-hmm.
Going into NoSQL or, you know, not only SQL would be pretty good. Now you have CouchDB too, which has like a native REST interface where we can just interact with the server. Rather than MongoDB's protocol of choice is a proprietary, I would say proprietary, it's open source, but it's a proprietary.
But it's on the wire?
It's not HTTP or anything standard. It's actually just MongoDB//. Mm-hmm. It's their own protocol.
So CouchDB has a RESTful protocol instead.
Yeah, exactly.
So in theory, I could query that over the internet, right? Like if I have the endpoint, I can just give it a few do a few REST calls, and it would get me some of the data.
Yeah, you could just plug it right into your web server and just say you have a Node service or something, and just go off and make calls to it. I believe I would be surprised if there wasn't any language adapters for the REST API, because REST APIs are kind of annoying anyways if you just use it directly. But that's just my opinion anyway.
Yeah.
It should be fine as far as that works. And it's interesting because they decided to write an Erlang.
Erlang? What?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's like
I've never heard of that. There's so many languages out there that it's hard to keep up. And as an evangelist, it's sort of our job to be aware of everything that's going on, but
yeah,
it's incredibly difficult.
Well, it's funny because Erlang is actually something we haven't really heard of too much,
yeah.
But it's been around for a while. It's like, I believe like they used it.
Wasn't that the language that was used in telecom companies?
Exactly, for telephone switches and things like that. And I believe it's because of transactionality or things like that is why it's a good language for those things. But so MongoDB is written in C++, whereas CouchDB is written in Erlang. So there's just some differences in that. But I would definitely encourage looking at all your options before you kind of settle onto one database. But I think what you'll get out of this MVA is that the specific use cases that we would do for a document-oriented database like MongoDB and kind of have an idea of how it might fit to your data store, it might not. And that's good to know if it doesn't. And how we can do some really complex queries, but as well as some cool data processing. So it'll be pretty neat.
So before we conclude this module, I actually got a few questions from the audience. And Vishal asked, What other data format does MongoDB support apart from JSON?
It doesn't.
It's only JSON. It stores documents in JSON format, and that's about it.
Well, the question wasn't too clear, but as far as...
can we store maybe binary data in the JSON?
So if you're talking about like, hey, I want to store a photo in the JSON document, or in the MongoDB document, which appears as JSON, but it's really BSON, just FYI. But within there, you can totally do like a SQL database. You can take like an encoded binary blob and put it into your database. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. Anything can be described with a string, right? And you can interpret it as a picture, as however you want. I don't recommend that. I think you should use CDNs and things like that. But if you have to, there's nothing stopping that. But as far as like, if you're talking about like data formats like numbers and strings, it's really what you would expect in JSON. So you have numbers and you have strings, and you know that's really what it is.
I got a good question from TJ. Is there a way to build an app that allows 2 to 4 people share data between each other, like say budget, dates, information, and even maybe have a way for these people to chat with each other through the database? So store all this stuff together in the database. Is that possible? Can we have multiple relationships?
Well, and that's the point of having these databases, right? Think about everything you use every day, any type of social platform, any type of things like that. They hold in a database. So this is a general database solution where we have different users, and they might have different things, and they will talk to each other by storing data. For example, I have my profile information. Someone else can look at that profile information. That's kind of how it works. Now, with something like MongoDB, you would have your MongoDB server, and then you might have a couple of websites, right? Or a server which interacts with that database, and then you have your consumers, your end users. You're on your website, right? And I have one user that's looking at my profile information that's stored in that MongoDB database, and I have another user that's writing or might be adding. I could be on the other end changing my data. Now, if we're talking about messaging and things like that, I think there are
other NoSQL databases that do a better job handling things that are more like messaging type situations, like Redis, I heard, has PubSub built into the database.
That was the first thing I was thinking of right off the box. Right. It's like Redis is actually pretty good for PubSub. We can actually send messages back and forth. And there was actually a quick start that we have on that. So you could check that out as well. But it actually would make that pretty easy. But as far as like Mongo, if you did that, the way it would work is really you would put the message in MongoDB, and then the user would have to pull it. And it wouldn't be as instantaneous as you want for chat. So you could do that. There's also a variety of services that provide APIs for chat services as well, specific to that. So I wouldn't recommend that too much for things that are so pertinent that you kind of want to do instant messaging. But maybe if you did like non-instant messaging, like if you want to just send a message to someone and have it there, I would say that's actually pretty, you could reasonably do that with MongoDB.
Another question that I got that I thought was fairly interesting. So in a tabular database, if you had these columns and they were of a specific type, in our example, we had account types like investment, checking account, and things like that. Is the performance in a document-oriented DB just as good as in a tabular database when we're going specifically for things like give me all the accounts of an investment type?
Well, yeah, so it depends, right? So I think you're talking about maybe a string search versus on like Mongo versus other databases. That's a really wishy-washy question because we're talking about generally between a lot of different databases. I would say when you're talking in general, when you're going over keys, it's fast. It's linear. Right? When we're talking about a string comparison across a large amount of collections, and I could even do it in our demo, we'll see that it takes a little bit longer than what we would expect for index values like IDs. So I wouldn't say that there's a huge performance gain in that regard. I think what we're talking about with the secret sauce here with document-oriented databases is really the join. The join is where we don't have to, we can avoid that, which reduces that time. But as far as like on a column, if you have strings, you're searching over it, I can't think of a technical reason why it would be that much faster on a NoSQL database versus a SQL database.
All right. So thank you so much for tuning into the first module. In conclusion, we covered what is a tabular data store and what are joins that they use. We also talked about how document-oriented databases store data in whole documents. And we showed you how you can do different types of queries in document-oriented databases, and the fact that document-oriented databases don't need necessarily joins.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. So now, if you're very interested in staying online, we'll be back in 10 minutes. And our next module is how to actually get started with MongoDB and do some basic queries.
Cool.
So thank you so much for being here, and please come back. We'd love to show you a few more really cool things.